You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 121. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, the state of the Indians, which is not good. We'll look at their schedule coming up and just how they got where they are and hopefully maybe how they can dig themselves out. One of those ways is potentially by trading for a player or two. We'll look at some of the trade deadline target potential, including some players from divisional rivals, so maybe they can grab somebody who they play quite a bit. And we'll look at the Indians' recent dedication to young players and if they're actually following through with it, if it's actually working, if there is maybe some other people, Bobby Bradley, they could call up to help out on the team. We'll look at all that. And I went to an Indians game for the first time in a long time and might be the only one I get to this year. So I had some thoughts about that. It was a lot of fun and just something else to talk about because, good Lord, this team is bad. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm all right, I guess. Thanks for asking. are the White Sox good then? Or is what's the takeaway from this past weekend?
I feel like at one point it seemed like they're rebuild was lost, like last year and the year before. It felt like they
stalled.
They stalled, that's a good word for it. And now their rebuild is what it's supposed to be, because right. We were talking before the podcast that Yoan Moncada is awesome, Tim Anderson is awesome, Lucas Giolito is now apparently a Cy Young candidate. So it's weird and it's interesting. If it was any other team in any other division, I would think it's cool, but I really don't like the White Sox right now.
I mean, Tim Anderson, I wrote about him last year for a different website. And I did note that he had been elevating the ball more. He just wasn't hitting it far enough. But
yeah, I feel like for the longest time they were waiting for him to be good, weren't they? He was next big thing at one point.
And then sort of. I mean, he was. You know, he didn't start playing baseball until like late high school, and maybe even in college or something like that. So he's always just been kind of a guy who's learning as he goes. And he wasn't bad last year. He just wasn't great offensively, but. Good fucking Christ, he's beating the hell out of the ball this year. Sorry for swearing.
How dare you? There's going to be some people who are shocked. They're going to pull in their car while listening to the podcast.
At least
they'll
be offended as when they watch the Indians this year, huh?
Boom! Wait, hold on. I thought I had a rim shot somewhere. I don't have it.
Man. Oh, that's all right. Time shut up by opponent 5. This team stinks. But yeah.
Go ahead.
Last year, they were shut out 7 times all year. They've been shut out 5 times already this season. I just found that stat literally just now.
You know, they said that at the end of the last game, and I thought that was low. It's really only 5 so far? Maybe that's bad that's my reaction, but it felt like they've been shut out so many more times.
Last year,
I know it's right, because I heard them say it, but holy cow.
Last year, they only shut out 7 times, and they shut out the other opponent 17 times. The year before that, it was 6 shutouts, and then they shut the other team out 19 times. And that goes back to 2016 when they're shut out a total of 7 times and pitched 11 shutouts. I'm just thinking, beginning this offense might be a real problem for them. You know, some sort of a anchor around their neck holding down what could be otherwise a successful team that could have, I don't know, playoff hopes, dreams.
Never. This team, what are you talking about? We've watched all the excuses go away. Like the weather has warmed up, they still suck. Francisco Lindor is back and healthy, they still suck. I guess the last thing really left is that they need Jose Ramirez to hit well. If that's it, then and if they still suck, then it's hard to find any reason that they're this bad, yet they still are.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where you start looking around for people to blame. And this was actually something that I meant to mention as a topic we could get into before, but I forgot to tell you. But I just I got to thinking, what is the responsibility of a team owner to, I don't know, a fan base? I guess there's got to be some aspect of owning a baseball team or whatever it is, you know, a publicly consumed entertainment thing of this that has deep ties in the fabric of a community, that you have some obligation when a team has one of the greatest single assemblages of pitching talent in baseball history all at the same time to put effort into, you know, supporting that with other parts of a team. And I don't want to turn this into a let's bash on the Dolan thing, because then we're just, you know, falling into the same old rut we always do when it comes to talking about the Indians when they're bad. But like, just in general, what do you think? What do you think the answer is to that question? What is the responsibility, if any?
So I think as far as just strictly that question, I don't think they have much of anything. They own the team. They make the money off of it. And we always hear that it's a business and they make business decisions. But as far as the Indians specifically, it's getting a lot harder to hold this position. But I still feel like it's the trade deadline is where the line that if we're going to see the Indians improve to make a run, that's going to be it. Even before the season, if you remember, I said a bunch of times that I think it made sense that they didn't grab these guys at the beginning of the year. Of course, then it seemed like they'd win the division by 10 games either way. But I think it made perfect sense to wait until they see what they really need at the deadline and then make the move to do it. So for me, I think no owner really has, they should, but they don't have a moral obligation to put the best team out there, I guess, is a way to put it. Like, look at the Mets. They constantly are terrible and they hate their owner, but he's still there. He's still doing what he does. And
sure,
there's not a whole lot you can do.
I mean, I don't know. I guess with the Mets, Mets are a very weird example of we're robbed by Bernie Madoff and stuff like that. But, like, I mean, conversely, you've got a team like the Yankees. By all rights, they could just kind of coast on that team and jerseys. If it was just the idea was just about making money, I guess, they could just coast on history for years and just, you know, make bank. Just selling hats around the world and whatnot. But they put the effort in, obviously. They spend the money on players and development and things of that nature. Red Sox do. You know, they'll get the payrolls of the Dodgers and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm looking the wrong way and owning a team is all just an ego thing. But I don't know. It just seems like there should be some kind of, I don't know. I just feel like if you spend that much, I don't know. Maybe not if you spend that much money, but if you do, you know, it's not like owning a fucking amusement park or something like that. I don't think it's a thing that people tie themselves and their family and their lifestyles and whatnot to emotionally for a long, long time. And then to see someone else just crap on it, I guess that's.
Yeah. And like the teams you listed, like the Yankees, Dodgers and Red Sox, those are huge markets. So that's not really like, that's the one thing. I know nobody wants to hear it, but as far as like the Dolans and spending money, I kind of get it. Everybody wants him to dump his own money into it, but if he's not going to, then I don't know many billionaires that are the goodness of their heart other than like Mike Ilitch who did. But if the team's not making the money to sustain itself the way it is, then I don't know how many billionaires are going to put more money into it of their own money to put into the team,
sure,
which I wish they would. And I think they should if they're going to bother owning it, but I don't know how much it happens. And like the Indians, how much they're worth isn't the same as how much they have to spend. And
Ilitch is a very interesting case too, because he not only was he obviously owner of the team and he wanted that to win for, you know, almost personally because he was a fan, but he's also a son of Detroit and he'd done so much for the city and all that stuff too. So maybe it is an ego thing. I don't know. We need more Cleveland billionaires, I guess. Kind of a tough thing to do.
I'd imagine it's a huge ego thing, even more than if you're a billionaire. How much more? I guess they always want more money, but it's not like a live or die thing for them. It's just another thing they own. They can say they own. And I do think that Paul Dolan isn't like an evil owner who wants to see the team fail just so he can make money. He's just
not as wealthy as others, and you know, and that kind of creates a recursive loop.
Well, it's not even that he's not as wealthy, it's that the Indians, their market isn't as big. Like, I don't care who owns the Indians, unless they're somebody who wants to put their own money into it just for fun. I don't think they're going to if the Indians aren't making enough money back for that.
And I wonder about that. What is the tipping point? You know what I mean? Because this is how many years now of the Dolans own the team, and they've done a great job themselves of building their own reputation of being cheap, you know. Like, they didn't sign players the fans wanted them to. Obviously, they can't sign Bryce Harper or whatever. But you know, like all the guys who walked this past year, or you know, offering CeCe Sabathia a big deal, but obviously not one he was going to take because he was obviously worth way more than that, or what have you. You know what I mean? Like, and there's no answer to this. But what is the tipping point back the other way? You know what I mean? Like when you see the owner spending the money, we saw this with the Tigers, you know, it was dumped a ton of money in that team and fans showed up constantly. They had some of the best attendances in baseball in a place that's substantially more economically depressed than Northern Ohio. I mean, this is Detroit, Michigan we're talking about. It's the poster child for everybody is poor. So I don't know. It's just something I've kind of idly thought about. What is that tipping point back to? When does the money pump, I guess, get the water rocket of baseball fandom off the ground?
So you're talking like a chicken and egg thing. Like, do the owners need to spend first before
you know,
fans come, and then they get the money, and then, yeah.
Well, I mean, another good example, I guess, would be the Astros. The new team, the new ownership came in, and they spent money not on obviously players, but on rebuilding everything from top to bottom.
And to be fair, the Indians have done that. They put a lot into their player development and stuff, but it hasn't worked as well as the Astros did so far.
And not to the degree that the Astros did as well.
Right. I mean,
part of that is, too, because we can draw a single line, basically, from Mike Hart to now. Mike Hart? No, Mike Hart is the director of sales for Lennox International.
Oh, who's John the Hart? That's going to bug me. John Hart. There you go. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
I haven't worked too much. Sorry. Anyway. I don't know. This is something I was thinking about because, you know, obviously at this point, with them being 11 and a half games out as of this recording, and I think by tiebreakers in third place.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, of course they haven't won that
because
many
because they just lost to the, you know, to the White Sox.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to feel it feels good to blame somebody for something, but as much as you can blame the players on the field, you know, guys like Bowers and Ramirez and Kipnis not performing, like someone else made the decision to field this team rather than a different team, and now we're burning year four of Francisco Lindor as an Indian. Oh God, it's year five.
Yeah, he doesn't seem too happy about it. I don't see him smiling quite as much on the field.
He seems a little bit unhappy about the situation.
He's still playing extremely well, but he's not smiling. Which I can't blame him. I wouldn't be smiling.
It would look fake right now. This is dreadful, dude. This is, I mean,
right. And even like Trevor Bauer, when he had that awful defense behind him, there are people mad at him for yelling when he was going off the field. Like, screw that. He should have been saying in the post conference how terrible his teammates were. Like, nobody needs to be a cheerleader right now.
No,
yell at your team when they're bad because they're awful.
Yeah, they're just not doing well, and it's, you know, it's tough to watch. I probably watched 3 games last week, maybe. I just sometimes it's just a struggle to watch because the offense is inept at times, and I like watching Jeffrey Rodriguez and the new kid Plesac, but
after a while, man, and even Jeffrey was, other than the fact he's injured now, but Plesac is really encouraging to watch.
Exactly, but like
it's these pitches they just keep pumping out, and it's really encouraging.
It's so impressive. They have, it really is cool, but you know, it's
But then they have like Greg Allen come up who isn't good for a while, and he's sent back down, and they have these hitters that can't seem to do much until they go somewhere else miraculously, and then there's Bobby Bradley just tearing it up in AAA, who's still not up for some God knows what reason, and Leonis Martin keeps getting at bats in center field. I don't know. It's a weird, and I don't know if it's sort of like put all that on Tito or if it's the front office who I can't imagine they're relying this much on these veteran guys, but it's an unwillingness to let the younger guys play for a length of time. And Oscar Mercado, the fact that he's got a ton of at bats is really, I like that a lot, despite even if he struggled a couple games, but
yeah,
I just don't know how long it's going to last if he goes through a slump or if we're just going to start seeing, I don't even know, there's no more veteran outfielders left, but if somebody else comes, I guess Tyler Naquin or...
The front office has done a great job of limiting Francona's options, at the very least. We've talked about this before, but by not giving him, you know, anything except basically Leonis Martin to roll out there in terms of veteran guys, Naquin is the next closest thing to that as a veteran outfielder the Indians have at this point.
Yeah, it's weird they have to do that to a manager they just gave an extension to, if that's what's happening, that they have to purposely not give him bad players because they know he'll play them.
And that can't be what's happening, because that's insane, right?
Right, that's the extension thing is the thing that throws everything off for me. Unless it's like ownership really likes Tito, or the front office just likes how he is with the players and just willing to let go of how regressive he is about most of his thinking, and they just love that he keeps a locker room together. Because I can't imagine they disagree this much on all their players, yet he got an extension.
Right, exactly. Like, there's got to be, especially with these days, he is an outlier as far as, you know, personality of the team, of leadership goes. I mean, he's the face of the leadership on the team in an era where two, maybe, other teams can say that, if that, even. Like, maybe the Cubs, sort of, but even they have Theo Epstein. I mean, outside of that, it's...
I would say AJ Hinch is getting there, right? Like, he's the face of the Astros.
No, God, no.
Oh, I think so, and he's an analytical guy, which is nice. I feel like Rocky Balboa. Whatever the hell the one. The Twins guy? Listen, man, it's like 9:30 at night.
What is the Twins guy's name?
Baldelli?
Rocco Baldelli?
There we go. I think he's getting there. Like, there's a lot of recognition for how much he's done
Rocco
for that
Baldelli
team.
Baldelli
Not now, the... but he's... he could be going that direction, I think. Like
the Zach AJ Levine went up there and turned them into gods. Like, he is the man among men up there.
That's another scary thing.
Manager.
What if we eventually find out it was Derek Falvey that was like behind all the good things the Indians did, and now it's just Chernoff and Antonetti just frantically slamming the controls, hoping something works.
Of all the people, yeah.
But no, I think Baldelli, I think he's going that direction. I think it's going to be these guys that are the good analytical managers.
60 games, you psycho. What are you talking about? The whole point of this era is exactly not that. It is the general manager as God at this point. Jeff Lew now is much more the face of management for the, Astros. I still forget AJ Hinch's name.
I just like AJ Hinch, so maybe I'm just impartial to that. But
whatever. You probably think he's Tori Lavullo every now and then. I know you do.
But there are so many managers, I can't think of their name. Like
who's the Braves manager right now?
Right, yeah.
It's
unless they're really bad, or like Mike Matheny was.
Right.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Gabe Kapler is still the Philadelphia Phillies manager.
It's only his second year, but he seems terrible. So since we're on the subject of coaching, and we'll make it like hitting coaching as well, we'll bring Ty Van Berkley into this. I want to read you something that somebody posted in the game recap. The guy that doesn't exist, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
So it was from the Chicago Sun-Times talking about... So Lucas Giolito, if you watched that game, that was one of the three that you watched. He dominated with a fastball changeup. He threw almost nothing else. It was like four curveballs. Yeah, throughout the game, Rick Manning kept like saying it over and over again that he's using just so few of his pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the game, he said they weren't adjusting to it, so we just stuck with that, Giolito said. I was like, why mess around? Let's go after them with heaters and chains up off that, and it worked out well.
Yeah.
Okay. After what is this, 2 weeks after Ty Van Berkley said we don't change anything after 7 years, and then a pitcher just comes out and says they weren't adjusting anything, so screw it, I'll just keep throwing the same two pitches and dominating a lineup. And obviously Giolito's a really good pitcher now and with a good changeup, so that's part of it. But the fact that a pitcher and his catcher, because it was also McCann who realized it and they were working through it, can so easily see that the Indians can't adjust to any of this is scary. And like now everybody else can see that if they didn't already. And the Indians don't seem like they're going to adjust to anything at this point, which is scary.
I wrote about that changeup of Lucas Giolito's not too long ago for another website, but it's much more vicious than it once was. Too is the amazing part. But no, that's insane though that he's just not that they just didn't make any adjustments to that. I mean, it's. I don't know. There's no other words for this because I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't put a lot of stock in hitting coaches because hitting is entirely reactive and it's hard to teach reaction. But that's one of the things you can see and point out and inform people of. Hey, he's only throwing fastballs and changeups. I mean, obviously, you can't just say do something about that because again, it's a good changeup, and he does have a good fastball too. And when paired perfectly together, that is the perfect pitch mix in, you know, I mean, I know the slider is the new number one pitch in baseball, but a great changeup is still the greatest pitch in all of baseball. There's no two ways about it. And his ability to dominate like that is impressive to say the least. I feel like we've seen the Indians do that every now and then, like some guy like Kluber just going, you know, sinker, slurve or, Bauer, I don't know, whatever, at this point he has 900 pitches again, so it's hard to tell. It's almost like he's reverting back to his old ways of throwing too many pitches, but whatever.
I feel like when they go to two, usually isn't it because that's what they have the feel for the night? It's not right. Knew nobody else could hit it and they weren't going to adjust, so I said screw it and throw them.
Oh sure. And that's, I mean, if you're really feeling, especially with a changeup, I mean, that's once again you're unhittable because it is a fat, especially if you're throwing, can throw spot low fastballs like he was and just followed up with a changeup. It's you break brains like that. So, I'm not gonna sit here and say that is a referendum on Ty Van Berkley, because again, I mean, if Giolito was feeling it, and again, his changeup is lethal this year. But at the same time, I kind of feel like your team should pick up on that somewhere at some point.
How much is Ty Van Berkley paying you, Merritt, to be on his side here?
How much is he being paid? Is the real question.
He hasn't been paid for years. He just keeps showing up, and they're not sure why. But they can't remove him from his locker, so they can't hire another hitting coach. So
right, exactly. I mean, if he's not being paid and he doesn't actually have an office, then you can't tell him to leave. And also, since he's just Terry Francona in a mustache and beard, then it doesn't matter anyway.
I don't know. The I feel like there was a question that somebody asked about a tipping point for Van Berkelio. I'll find it and add him in later. But, like, is there one eventually? I know people say, like you say it all the time, that it's true that, like, hitting coaches can't do a whole lot. But at some point when all these little things add up and you're not hitting and other teams are recognizing how poor you're adjusting to things and you go to the media and say you haven't adjusted for 7 years.
7 years, exactly. That tells a story, I think.
I mean, at some point, you got to do something. Right? Or no?
Yes. No, you're 100% right. And, I mean, I don't know if you just cast him on the fire as a sacrifice and what that fixes. I don't know. But, I mean, I bring a new hitting coach isn't going to teach these guys how to hit suddenly. But at the same time, you have – I don't know if it's a good thing to have all these young hitters around a guy who hasn't made any adjustments in 7 years and the Indians' offense has gotten worse every single year. I don't even actually know if that statement's true. It's probably not because Jose Ramirez has gotten so much better. But Kipnis has regressed. Carlos Santana's better. Carlos Santana left and got better, so I don't know if that's a positive.
But it's even just the different voice thing. It's like all these players going different places and they hear a different voice telling them probably the same information. Like, maybe Van Berkelio is just really fucking boring and they don't want to hear it anymore.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing about changing things like that up. But, I mean, it's troubling to look at something like, I don't know, Michael Brantley's numbers right now and think to yourself, this is as good as he's ever been offensively. In fact, it's his best offensive season almost. No, it is his best offensive season. Never mind.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
He's doing great down there. And
I'm really fucking happy for him, Eric.
It's super cool. And he just goes to a team that happens to have the most forward-thinking everything from top to bottom. And, yes, he's getting a lot of hits, and his BABIP is probably sky high without looking for it right this second. I don't know for sure, but he is leading all of baseball or the American League at least in hits, but he also has 10 home runs in 58 games, which is a mark. You know, he broke 10 home runs a bunch of times, but his peak is.
It took him a while though to get up to getting that much peak power. But
20 home runs, and that's that was in 156 games. So if he hits 30 home runs this year, my head's gonna blow up because I think that is a statement on something, because this is a 33-year-old man or 32-year-old man going to somewhere else who knows how to, you know, who a team that has cracked every code so far that we have and made him better. Meanwhile,
and even the Indians player said it last year, the Astros were just way more prepared than they were going into it. And there was speculation that meant that they thought that the Astros were like spying on them or something, which is Andre Knott said on his podcast.
I mean, but it sounded more and more like, but whatever, good for them. Spy.
Right. I feel like there's so much more than that though. Like they're better prepared every time, and it's ridiculous. And as far as like getting rid of Van Berkelio and it not fixing everything, it's like one of the things of the offseason. There's this season that's bugged me about like fans' perception of thing. Like everybody, so I wrote it today about Whit Merrifield potentially getting him, and a lot of people responded like, he's not going to fix everything. And it's like, well, you got to fix some things, like because they suck. You don't just not fix anything forever.
It's not like it's, you know. Sorry, I'm just clicking back to past seasons. I don't want to harp on the whole, you know, cutting off the head of the front office either, but maybe a gutting is new. Fireball.
You're just going straight guillotine all the way down?
That's it. I'm done with this. Clear the decks. Fire everything. Trade everyone off. I don't know. You get frustrated. So, no, but.
Just imagine the balls on Paul Dolan to say cut salary, and then after they do it, you fire them all and it doesn't work out. Just imagine the cojones in that guy.
Oh, my God. I'd be 100% behind him if he did that. Wow. All right. Really? Oh,
and the worst part is, like, everything they did do worked out so well. It's everything they didn't do. It's terrible. Because, like, every trade worked out pretty well, I guess, besides Jake Bowers and Yandy Diaz. But he's not going to be played. Who cares? And
I don't know. I'm getting irritated by Jake Bowers. And I don't want to be, because he's 23 goddamn years old. But, you know, it's just the same time. I think I'm just irritated by the whole team looking so inept offensively.
I mean, when Naquin comes up and Zimmer's back and Bobby Bradley hopefully comes up, the Bauer's got to be out somewhere, right? Like, I can't imagine he doesn't get optioned.
I don't know. Hopefully. I'm wondering about that. Like, are they going to do that? I'm not saying that trading away Yandy Diaz is a huge investment or anything like that, but he's hitting so well. It's a bit of an embarrassment, a little bit of egg on the face.
It's terrible optics, yeah, which is what they've had all season long, is bad optics every single step of the way.
Right. So I don't know. That's a looming question that I really don't want an answer to, because quite honestly, I just don't want to see Tyler Naquin anymore. I like him and everything.
That's
but
true, yeah.
Like, and the issue, I mean,
Bowers just isn't a good platoon hitter right now. I mean, it's basically dead even versus lefties or righties. I don't know. I don't know what you do with him because he's just hitting very badly right now. But he's got a low batting average on balls in play. He's hitting the ball sort of better than he was last year. At least his plate discipline is better. He's not hitting the ball as hard, as consistently as he was last year, but he's not pulling it as much. So he's 23. I don't know. You know, that's a guy who you just kind of look at and go, you got to let him play it out. And this is what we've talked about probably every single episode for at least a minute or two about this being a secret rebuild. But
yeah, no. And even like Terry Francona said that he needs to start seeing what these younger guys have. And I think that was after our last episode. It's been a couple of weeks, but he said that. And so far he stuck to it. Oscar Mercado's got quite a few at bats. And then Carlos Gonzalez is gone. And what's the other veteran they cut at one point? I mean, Hanley, but that was a while ago. Wasn't there another in between somewhere?
Oh, Brad Miller.
Brad Miller. So they have they've stuck to it and they've gotten rid of those guys and let these younger guys play. And so far it's sort of worked. And I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, other than the fact that
got kicked, so.
Yeah, I guess Bowers counts on that is what I'm trying to say, is that it's nice they're giving young guys a chance, but he just looks so, so bad. So I don't know.
And, and this is one of those things, too, that I can never wrap my head around. He puts together pretty good at bats a lot. But then it ends up with a ground out to, first base or something like that, or a really good pitch that just barely, that gets him. And you look at that and think to yourself, damn, get him next time, I guess. But at the same time, if that's happening,
but then you're saying that for 90 at bats in a row.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute, there's I don't know anymore, man. This is getting a little problematic, I guess. But he's still walking, I don't know. He's kind of an average hitter, in many ways. Obviously, in terms of actual output, he's not that average at all. But what is the line? You know what I mean? I mean, is the line just Naquin comes back and then they get rid of Bowers and send him back down to AAA to let him work on something? Because that's the question. What is he going to work on in AAA? You know? He's beat the hell out of
AAA. Other than just getting comfortable again, I guess, is the only thing.
And that's the only thing. And if that's the only thing, I almost feel like that's – I know baseball is kind of a comfort game, but I feel like that's kind of a waste too. Because I'd rather him just take his lumps fully and have a brutal second year, but not, one would hope at least, not lose hope. And that's the real question right there is, will that ultimately break him as a player? Because that's a tough part with managing young players like this who have a lot of talent. You wonder if it's going to wear on them after a while of them just failing and failing and failing and failing. And then they feel like that's just how they are. But again, how many times can you ground out to second base? A million?
We're getting there. We're going to find out.
I'm having flashbacks to 2013 or 2012.
Those are some dark times. We'll talk 2013, but 2012.
Bad baseball, man. Yeah, 2011 I think would be a perfect year. Jake Bowers troublingly reminds me of players I saw back then. I know, I'm sure he's more talented than any of them were, more highly touted. But sometimes, in those dark moments when you're watching him, just put together so many just almost a good at bat. And then it just suddenly, he doesn't swing or he gets locked up or it's a perfect pitch or he, again, grounds out to second base. I don't know. You gotta wonder at what point is that change. So.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
And so this brings us all around to, I guess, the real question of the Indians at this point on June 3rd, 2019. Is this it for this season? They're 11 and a half back. There's still a lot of time left, But the Twins are, in a lot of ways, the best team in baseball right now. The White Sox are about to pass the Indians, probably. I don't know. The good part is, I guess, that the Indians play the Twins a bunch coming up. I think they still have 16 games against them altogether. So basically, like, the season come down to a couple series playing against them. But they do, for the most part, have an easy road. I mean,
they just dropped 3 or 4 to the White Sox. Like, they got to win the other ones, too. You know what I mean?
Like, well, yeah. I mean, like, if they get it close enough and they just beat the hell out of the Twins, then that's really all that matters, if they win a bunch of those. And they do have, speaking of winning the others, they have a bunch of very winnable series coming up before the All-Star break. They play the Twins and Yankees back-to-back, which is going to be a real test of... I know it's not a test of how they are overall, but it's... You got to win in some of those. And then they play the Reds, Tigers, Rangers, Royals, Orioles, Royals, and Reds again. So it's a really easy stretch going into the All-Star break, hopefully, for any team that should be good. So maybe if they have a couple good series against the Twins and Yankees and then rip off a winning streak. I mean, theoretically, if this team can actually be a baseball team, they could be, what, like a game or two back or even ahead by the All-Star break, depending on how things go. So it's not completely over, I guess, but it feels real bad right now. Oh, it never looks good to be 11.5 back. So
this is definitely the lowest point of the season. And the other issue we have to look at too is that same stretch after they leave Cleveland, Minnesota goes to Detroit, Seattle, and then Detroit, then Seattle comes to town, Kansas City, Boston, Kansas City, Tampa, White Sox, and then Oakland and Texas. And that gets them to the All-Star break, I believe. They played Cleveland one more time. So it's not like the Twins are facing a buzzsaw at the same time. The Indians just have to keep pace and beat them when they get the chance to.
Yeah, and I mean, eventually the Twins have to come back down to earth, right? Like, they can't be this good forever.
Well, you know, I mean, we talked about that a month ago. Yeah. You know, and I had that pithy comment about how I think the Indians are doing something more consistent than the Twins are doing. But once again, I mean, Jorge Polanco is actually getting better, it looks like. And Max Kepler.
Are they allowed to do that? I don't think batters are allowed to get better. Is that a
like,
thing they can
like
do?
Like, in the season, it's like he's accelerating. It's insane. Kepler, same thing. Buxton, same thing. Like, their entire outfield is, wow. The outfield, 851, 842, and 842 are the OPSs of their three starting outfielders. That's actually kind of fun and weird.
See, this is the same problem with the White Sox. I like them too much. I want to like this team, but I hate them so much.
I don't know. I can never like the Twins. I have my one saving grace is the Twins have just always bugged me because they always laid out. So anyway, so look at this. The Twins have losing records against two teams so far this year. Guess who they are?
Probably some garbage teams.
Nah, it's the Yankees and the Phillies.
Right. Well, shit. They haven't played a bunch of garbage teams yet. They still have the whole AL Central to play.
They beat Baltimore 6 times. They beat the White Sox 3 times. Detroit, they're 4-2. Houston, 4-3. But my issue has always been the run they had in the late 2000s when they just kept on laying down for the Yankees. And I just don't like that happening. And so that kind of always soured me, the Twins, you know? Because... Yeah, at least stand up for yourself. God damn.
Punch the Yankees in the mouth once in a while. Geez.
Like, you know, but yeah, you get battered and bruised by them. It felt like for 6 years. I know it was only like 2 or 3 seasons, but I just felt like they just constantly just got annihilated by the Yankees and route to like either a World Series win or an ALCS or at least a nice run for the Yankees. But no, I have no problem. I don't know. They're just... The Twins are not for me.
But as far as those annoying Indians, I mean, like Matt Schlichting posted today that he's basically recalibrating how he feels about the team just as a way to cope with watching this every day. Like, I don't feel I'm ready to do that yet because, I mean, for one, I wasn't ready for it to happen this soon to go back into even a secret rebuild mode, and I didn't want it to end without a World Series. So mentally, I'm hanging on to it the last possible second that maybe they can go on this run before the All-Star game and trade for somebody and then be right back in first place, and we'll look back at this and laugh and be happy we had an eventful season for once. That's my dream, and not being 20 games back and in third place in the AL Central by the time September rolls around.
I mentally steeled myself for this even coming into the season of, hey, you know, maybe they won't be that good offensively, but they're going to get some good young guys who will get better, and then they'll be better in the long run. And it's just the young guys aren't getting better yet. So, and more than anything else, just Jose Ramirez isn't good right now, and that's sad. You know, it's if it would be better if he was hitting well, because he's then at least it's fun. But
I can't even be angry at him. He just looks so sad all the time.
He does look sad, and that makes me feel bad. You know,
and the one time he got a hit, he finger gunned. He did the little swagger walk. I was so happy for him.
When he does his little pimp walk, it's the best thing on earth. it's the best. He's such a little, just a delightful little man. And when he's bad, you're just like, no. Jose, no. Get the home run pitch. No.
Just hit something. It's terrible.
I that's the worst. When you drop your hopes all the way from home run pitch down to squeak just one by contact. Squeak one by the shortstop. Just do something.
So I want to talk about something slightly more fun, maybe on not, depending on how you view it. But I went to an Indians game. I know you, Mr. I live near Washington, D.C. I can go to him all the time. Mr.
I live literally in Washington, D.C., not near.
Well, anyway, I finally got to go to one. And we were talking before that I mentioned that one of the reasons I thought attendance was so low, that was because it's so hard to book a game. And you're like, what? Because for you, you just go, would you literally walk to the stadium, right? You decide to have
hour before. No, I take the train to Chinatown and then transfer to the Green Line and I'm there.
Now, see, for me, that just seems nuts because I've never lived closer than 2 hours to a stadium. So to be able to do that is crazy to me. And so the way I had to do it was basically
playing. Chicago's even easier, by the way. Hop on the red line. You're right there either way. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. And we only went for a day, but it was like planning a vacation. The fact that we had to plan where we're going, and it was cost an absurd goddamn amount of money because I wanted to at least get decent seats for our only game.
Oh, sure. You know, I mean,
we got really nice seats. So
I used to go to Red Sox games with my dad. And I live in Connecticut. So it was a solid 3 hours each way. And we did get
that seems manageable to me. I'm 5 hours from the Indians. I don't feel like I could do that in one day. But 3 hours, I think I could do if I had to.
Still sucks, though, when you're driving your dad's tiny little Sentra with your annoying little brother. Oh, God.
And I got to take 3 kids, which was, it worked out way better than I thought it would. Like the two older ones.
Though, dude.
I mean, they actually watched the game, which is the most amazing thing to me. Because the Indians have a kids clubhouse, and we took them to that. And it just turns out it's more for like toddlers. So that was kind of disappointing. I told them it closed after the sixth inning because I didn't want to go back. But we came back and actually watched the game. I'm glad they couldn't see into the clubhouse because they kept asking, it's closed. They don't have it open anymore. Because every time we'd walk up there, they'd get bored immediately, but they wanted to see it again. But, I mean, for the most part, it was fun. My son is, for some reason, he wants to be a Yankee fan, and he decided after the game that he doesn't like the Yankees quite as much anymore because he had so much fun, so that worked out.
Good. See, that's what you got to do.
Even the staff there, I don't know, because, see, I'm not from a big city, so I don't go to, like, big events. I don't know if just staff everywhere at big event things are always so friendly and know what's going on, but it was bizarre to me. I'm used to dealing with, like, not to disparage, like, Target and Walmart employees. I used to work at Target, and I know how that feels, but, like, there's nobody ever this nice or knowledgeable at just regular old stores. Probably someone will get paid nearly enough, but like everybody here, they knew exactly where things were, or they knew who to talk to, or they just seemed like they were happy to be there. It almost felt fake at times because they were so happy, but there were times that it was just so nice to be able to talk to literally anybody and they knew what you wanted. And like one of the most relatable things was on the way to the clubhouse. This was the game that Trevor Bauer started where it rained and he gave up a bunch of home runs.
Yeah.
Like this guy who clearly has to look excited about the Indians because it's part of his job. But like Trevor Bauer hit home run, just saw him like do a deep sigh. He looked at me as it's gonna be a long day again. Like these poor guys. Forget us sitting at home, we have to talk about the Indians. They have to live it every day and pretend they care about this team.
Well, that's the thing.
It's just gotta be rough, and I feel
a lot of those guys, they do like the team and they don't make a ton of money. They probably make a decent amount of money above minimum wage, and they're going to watch baseball every day. So that guy is definitely feeling it the way you do.
It's funny because it was like a quiet part of the stadium because everybody, it was like back to the clubhouse, and it was just a huge sigh when the home run went by. But I've realized like when the team sucks like this, it's not the millionaires playing or the billionaires owning that feel bad. It's those guys who like work at these teams, and they have to deal with probably obnoxious drunk people all the time who are angry at the team and take it out on them. And I don't know, it's cool. Even if you've ever been to an Indians game, I don't know how popular it is, but the margarita guy who just walks around and yells like really loudly about margaritas is my favorite guy in the world. He has his big backpack on where he dispenses margaritas and he goes, margaritas! And he scares the shit out of people and it was great. There's a lot of fun things about going to the game. And I can also understand now a little more like when you get on Twitter after an awful game, like Twitter usually agrees that was garbage and I'm miserable. But then when you go to the game and you log on afterwards, like, why are you all so mad? There was a baseball game and it was cool. Because I wasn't watching Twitter.
I've been to some trash baseball games in my time and
The other day, so went to a baseball game. It's fun and nice and a good time.
Right, exactly. Yeah. This was one that was Kevin Pluck. He looked like shit the whole game, and I didn't even register that much. He just missed a couple passes. It's not that big of a deal. Who cares, guy? You get him. You're a human. You're right there in front of me.
Well, that's the thing. An error in baseball, you know, if you fail 10% of the time, you're terrible, apparently. But, you know, honestly, I only notice.
Yeah, and they show it. It doesn't help. Yeah. They show it so many times in the broadcast.
Right,
exactly. And you're looking at it the whole time. And yeah, I don't know. So I guess I can quite understand. Unless you go to the game so much that you're so used to it that you can start to feel the pain of them being terrible. But for the most part, I get it now. Like, people are always optimistic about the team when they're like season ticket holders, or they're always in this environment of positive baseballness, which is, it's almost propaganda levels way making that sound. But it's just fun being there. Even when it's a bad game, you don't notice as much there. Mm-hmm. I just want to go to more of them now. This is the first one I've taken my kids, and it's weirdly the most fun I've had at one. Before, well, it's always just been...
Don't you live near any minor league teams?
No, I live near an independent league team, which is the Elmira Pioneers, and their stadium is just a literal dumpster. It's awful. And I do like independent league baseball, though, because they're worse. So there's a lot more, like, balls that are errors, or they get through the outfield. There's a lot more just in play, which is really fun, I think. Right, yeah, a lot of action. It ends up, like, 11-9 and 7 errors altogether. And it's awful baseball, but it's more fun to watch sometimes. Yeah, so I got to go to a game, and that was fun. It was neat. Everybody's super nice. I bought way too many tiny little things.
What'd you buy? Did you get ice cream and a helmet?
I did, then they forgot their helmets.
Ah,
that was the one thing I mentioned to get, and they forgot. But we got these little squishy Francisco Lindors, which were cool. We got foam fingers. They got I thought, like, I just bought these little things, it won't be expensive, but it was like, it was $8 for a poncho, which was just a piece of plastic, but it was raining and they didn't want to be in the rain. So, like, sure, I'll spend $16 for you both to get ponchos. That's great. I love it.
Can't you just share one? What's going on here? You're small.
Just squeeze in there.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, even through the rain, it was still fun to sit in the rain. I think that was part of the fun, almost, was sitting in the rain and how weird it was. And they enjoyed that. Once they got the poncho on, they were all for it.
You're a nut job. Never mind. I take that back.
It's just nice that it's unique. I'd almost rather be in that than the burning sun. At least, like, rain once in a while was okay, like that day. And you get up and walk around and come back and it's gone.
I went to a game that was 107 degrees last year.
Oh, God.
I'd prefer the
rain. Was that in D.C. or someone else?
It was in Baltimore, actually.
Yeah. Don't you prefer the rain? Wouldn't it be nice to get rain on once in a while?
I very much prefer.
Get your little poncho and sit in your seat. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God.
At least margarita guy yelling at you in the rain. It's all good.
So fucking hot.
So do you have a best memory of a game you went to, just in general? I would include that as mine now, as this game. Like a favorite game, I guess, because this was mine.
I think my favorite games. So... All right, so this is entirely not about the baseball, but it's a great game anyway. Last year, I went to see the Indians play the Orioles up in Baltimore, and it was the Saturday before I got married, and my wife and I just needed a day to just leave town and de-stress and stuff. And Clevinger threw a shutout, and it was just a nice day, and it was just a nice little moment. That and then the... I saw Curt Schilling pitch a complete game loss up in Montreal in 2001 when Vladimir Guerrero had a game-winning home run off him, which was...
Oh, that sounds great. Immense. For multiple reasons.
I mean, it was dollar hot dog day in Canada, so it's like 60 cents American. It was Schilling at the height of his powers when he was on the Diamondbacks. Vladimir Guerrero again hitting a home run off into the mists of Stade Olympique when no one is there. That was the shitty drive from Connecticut to Montreal.
The shitty drive is just part of the ambiance.
That's
that
so far, by the way. That's so much New York State. My God, it's just all the way up to the top of it. Good Christ.
So mentioning dollar dog or cheaper hot dogs reminded me, like, as soon as I get there, like, before I went, I asked for people's food suggestions, and immediately, as soon as I got to park, I forgot them all and just went to the first place I found, which still worked out because it was like Smokehouse Barbecue or something. But I always feel like still so overwhelmed when there's that many people in this thing. Like, I feel like I'm on TV all the time, and it was weird. But that's another part of it. It's maybe you big city folk are so used to it.
Well, my wife has this thing about whenever we go to a game, she like looks up beforehand, like all these stadiums have the hip new food now, you know, like the local this or that other thing.
The goddamn Fruit Loop hot dog.
Precisely.
for exactly. But she always like decides to get like some kind of fancy pseudo gourmet food, and it's just.
It's what are you doing?
Every single time she's disappointed. It's one of my favorite baseball traditions now. Is she gets disappointed by some weird like Asian fusion food she got, and I'm just eating like they're not cheap, but I'm eating like just hot dogs and ketchup, going so good these hot dogs with ketchup on them, yummo.
I'm enjoying my life.
But like honestly, just get fried food or boiled food, you know, or grilled food, things that are. Things that an Irishman would recognize as food, basically.
I remember the first game I went to. I went, there was a Food Network kiosk in one of the hallways that nobody was at, and I went there. It seemed like a weird choice to be there, but I got a hot dog with coleslaw on it, and I was like, cool, I'm at a baseball game now. Of all the places that are in Progressive Field to eat, and there's just this little shitty kiosk in the back, and I went there. So
that is so also a thing. Everywhere. That I experienced the first time up in Montreal was a hot dog with coleslaw on it. I'd never had it's so that good. Before. It was so good.
And it is. They call it the Clevelander there, but
it's only $8. That's $4.80 or something like that. American, you know, I was a teenager. I was rich. I was feeling good.
Yeah, coleslaw on anything is good. First of all, pulled pork. It's amazing, which is what I had last time. I had a pulled pork or I had a brisket sandwich with coleslaw on it. It was super good.
They give you the coleslaw in a little plastic thing. You just plop it right on top.
Hell no. They scoop that shit on there.
Really? Whenever I go to like a barbecue place or something like that, that coleslaw inside of them, I was like, plop.
Oh, yeah. When it's on the side, I put it on every time.
Yeah, you got to put it right on there.
Yeah. So what do you say we answer some questions, man?
All right. Let's take care of these guys. Little
fan service. You guys on Twitter, Facebook. Yeah, just for the fans, man. All our growing fans baby. Who are. So at Ghost in the Shell. He wants to know why or how the Indians so damn good at developing starting pitching. I mean, Merritt, do you think there's a reason for it other than the fact they don't let anybody be a reliever and they just leave everybody as a starting pitcher?
Yeah, and I have thought about this because if you think about the guys who have come up and are such good starting pitchers, absent probably Carlos Carrasco, I could not see any of these guys being starting or being relief pitchers. I just can't do it. Trevor Bauer, early on, his repertoire was just too good, and he's demonstrated too much durability. Mike Clevinger, up until very recently, just didn't have the velocity, but he had that kind of effective wildness to him early on, and now that he's developed a strong slider, a solid changeup, and he's demonstrated this year, you know, 97, 98 miles an hour, and I think the same thing would be said for Corey Kluber. He never threw more than 94, I don't think. And when he was doing that, he was just stunningly average. And then he developed what was a great breaking ball. So I don't know I don't know what it is. Because like you read about like one of the reasons like Bauer is so durable and can pitch a billion innings is because of his weighted ball routines and things like that. And I know the Indians do things like that. Within the organization, according to things I have read, the other ways of pitching, basically your long tosses and they give their guys a lot of free reign. So I don't really have a firm answer to that. I don't think they really developed Jeffrey Rodriguez. Obviously he came here a couple months ago and was already starting, you know, he'd already started for the Nationals a couple games last year.
And I also don't know if he's one of the like really high.
Right, exactly. I mean,
he's had a couple good starts, but
it's 43 innings and he's struck out what 32 guys. Same thing could be said for what's his name who just pitched. Thank you, Zach. Please, and then of course on the other side of things, you have guys like Cody Anderson. Now, obviously, he had arm surgery, so that's a tougher read right there, I guess. Luck, but I think luck's a big deal. Like Trevor Bauer is an outlier. I think Shane Bieber.
Well, no, Trevor Bauer's not an outlier. He was.
I think he's an outlier in terms of these other guys. He was given almost as much. He was given purportedly a very long leash by the Indians to do what he thought would work to make him a better pitcher, and maybe that. That could be maybe the reason why, right? Their willingness to accept new ways of thinking when it comes to pitching. That's my thought. And why it doesn't translate over into relievers. Unlucky drafting, maybe. Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that's drafting's a huge part of it, I think. And they haven't had a ton of really is depthful a word? Deep drafts. There you go. Well, they get these high end guys and they don't have a whole lot coming up behind it, I don't think.
Or they get them, and I know we talked about, I think we talked about this last year actually. There were guys who were supposed to make their debut in the Indians pen who threw real hard, but they got hurt. Or they were traded for whoever, you know, whether for I don't know, whatever. Like they were thrown on a trade somewhere. Like I think the Andrew Miller deal had.
Justus Sheffield.
No, there was another. Starter, but... There was another arm.
Oh, like
in
JP FireEisen and.
Yeah, you know, like there were these other arms that were like looked upon as maybe the future guys.
And right, Brad Keller. Got hurt. Right.
Yeah, I think so. And then Brad Heller. You look back a little further too, and they had a little bit of unluckiness with guys getting hurt. Adam Miller, right? Was a guy, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Remember him? Yeah. So I think it's a combination of those things, honestly, luck and just their willingness to think outside the box and let guys kind of do their own thing. I don't think there's any one structure of a Cleveland Indians pitcher, because all four of those guys that I mentioned, five of them, whatever, are completely different pitchers from the other one.
All right, good question. So from Akron, Ohio, he wants to know, if we're sellers in July, do we sell Santana? He's got a big for Cleveland contract, and we have Bowers Bradley ready to take over, and he's having a great year, so we get a good return. Ow, my soul. I mean, you're not going to trade him next year. He's not going to be worth nearly as much, and he's probably won't be as good as this year. Right. So, I mean, like...
It's a great idea, quite honestly.
If the Indians are in absolute blow-it-all-up rebuild mode, I guess, but good Lord, that's depressing.
Yeah, trade him and trade Trevor Bauer, too. Fuck it. I don't care.
Brad Hand, that's another one you got to throw in there.
Oh, you're throwing him. Trade Brad Hand. Yes. Wow. If you could trade Santana and Hand, you can inject a ton of talent. Also, by the way, there was a headline on Indians.com today, which was cryptic and worrisome. And it ties into this. Where is it? It was like Indians look to focus on growing young, something about growing young. I think I saw it on Twitter, but it was like Indians looking to focus on expanding like young talent pool. And I recognize that that's probably based on the draft, but it's also worrying because what if they start trading major players? That's another great way to inject more talent into the farm system. So
yeah, that's sad.
Luplo.
Although on the other hand,
too. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. How much do you get for a platoon bat, though, really? As good as a platoon bat as he is. But on the other hand, if most of these players are playing the way they're supposed to be, and then you trade Bauer and Santana, you can still win a couple games without those two. So it's not like it's still part of the secret rebuild, I think.
No, it's really depressing. Doubt, you know, to go. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if we really wanted to start counting wins here, Carlos Santana is a first baseman. Like, yeah, they're very important, but they move the needle way less than four all-star caliber pitchers, and they have five of them when they're all healthy, theoretically.
And especially if Bobby Bradley is anything close to what he can be, like that's a huge, right. You've already made up Carlos Santana. Would it be better for him? So what's their leverage if they do it now compared to waiting till Bobby Bradley, if he's good? I guess they'd be better off doing it now, right? When you don't know.
Trading who? Santana?
Trading Santana.
Well, I think the trading, God damn, we're talking about this.
We're going to just pretend it's going to happen. When should they do it?
In the theoretical situation of trading Carlos Santana, yes. I've always wondered why teams wait as long as they do to make the trade. Part of that has to be because, like, you look at the Indians right now. Yes, they're 11 and a half games out of first place. They're two games out of a playoff spot. Now, they'd have to jump Texas and... Well, they have to jump Boston and then Texas, I guess. Yes, so you get a wild card slot. So it's not like they're out of the race, and I think that's part of, like, the reason that there's reports that Seattle's planning on blowing it up. I'm just realizing on this wild card standing things, I don't think that the Royals are even listed.
They probably shouldn't be.
Wow, they're not even on this list. They're just like, nah, fuck them.
That's not happening. Get out.
Jesus, are they that bad? They are that bad. They have 19 wins. Oh my god. It's so troubling because they have all these players on the team that I really like. But then I realized
they're we're mocking 19 wins, Merritt, but the Indians have 29.
I know, but 10 more wins, dude. It's 10 more wins.
Yeah.
That's the interesting trade, Alex Gordon, right there, right now. Get him out of there. Jesus.
Yeah. Get Whit Merrifield over here.
I don't understand. Yeah, exactly. The sitting on the talent. And the only thing I can think is because you think you still have a shot, and maybe teams, other teams haven't realized what they're willing to give up yet. That's the only thing I can think. So it's strange, though. Making a trade on June 3rd is a little premature, maybe. But July 1st. But
they're in danger of being caught in the middle, though. They're either going to be.
Sure.
They're not good enough to win, and they're not. They don't have enough to rebuild. So it's kind of a.
Well, but that's situation. The thing. The rebuild wouldn't be then through the draft. It would be through.
Right. So it's more of a reloading, I guess, right?
Right. Well, it's still a rebuild. I mean, the Indians have never drafted superbly well. You look at the guys who are on the team, the two theoretically best players on the team were a draftee and an international signee. The best pitchers were, theoretically at least, again, a trade. Shane, I don't know where the hell Shane Bieber came from.
He was
Canada,
drafted.
I think.
Wrong
that Bieber. That was a Justin Bieber joke, everyone.
Bad one.
Sorry. Oh, God. Have that removed.
Yeah, so really, we answer this question. It's, I don't know. I guess they do. It just sucks. It's basically the answer.
Yeah, I lost the thread, but they should probably trade Santana if they're 15 games out of the All-Star break. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for that question, but I also hate you.
Yeah, you jerk. Way to bring us all down.
What are you doing?
Don't go bringing me down. You know that song, huh? No?
Yeah. All right. So this is one kind of ties into it. At Richard K. Bach, he wants to know, is the emergence of some new young starters make trading veterans more likely? And I think, yeah. I think, well, so sort of. There's the veterans worth trading are not going to be traded. Because I don't think Carlos Santana is going to be traded, no matter what young guy comes up, really. But like, Leonis Martin.
Specificity on that question, actually.
Right.
I don't know what he means. Because there's two hitters on this team over that have an OPS plus over 100. And two starters with an ERA plus over 100. Now, right. I think Carlos Carrasco is better than he's been. But I think he probably means Jeffrey Rodriguez and the new guy.
Oh, starters. Okay. I read that wrong. I was thinking like starting players. But he's talking starting pitchers. Okay.
Yeah. Come on, Matt. We talked about this before. So, starters are right. Pitchers.
So maybe. I mean, like Bauer, right? He can end up being, if they have so many good starters and you use Bauer as a mini Reed loader, then maybe. That's not too crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, where do you send him to? To the
right.
Astros? He'd be happy.
Yeah, I don't know if you get anything for Trevor or Corey Kluber at this point, what you want back for him.
No, definitely not. That's the epitome of selling low right there. That same thing with Carlos Carrasco. You're not going to trade Shane Bieber by any stretch of the imagination.
Or Clevinger or Klesak. Or...
Yeah. That doesn't make sense. And, I mean... Let me type a couple of letters in. Top 10 farm system.
And you know, Carl, if they traded Carlos Carrasco, that just follows along with their brand this season of terrible optics. Like, he loves Cleveland. He loves his team. He took a really friendly offer to stay here, and then you deal him away. Like,
yes, no.
That would be very much 2019 Indians.
I don't think that there's... We talked earlier in the show about, you know, morals and whatnot. I think it'd be a horrible thing to do, to trade away Carlos Carrasco. That is a gutting maneuver for a man who loves this city way more than anyone should love anything. It's
not even a knock on Cleveland. It's just on anything. Nobody should love anything as much as he loves Cleveland.
I like Chicago a lot, but come on. Anyway, top 10, so they could trade Trevor Bauer to the Rays. They have...
I think the Dodgers option is still out there for like Verdugo, maybe if the Dodgers decide that they have enough outfielder. I don't know.
If they could get him, he's hitting the shit out of the ball right now.
Yeah. They need somebody. So I don't know. But thank you for the question, Richard.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
It wasn't quite as depressing either. Thanks.
No.
Nick from Akron, Ohio, who actually talked a lot on Twitter. He's nice, but other than his mean question.
Yeah, jerk.
So at Slang EUG. He's a common asker and he gives us a lot of good questions. His first one, he said, do you think if the problems the last few years could be distilled down to one player, would it be Jason Kipnis? After 2017, the realistic opening day roster should have had Urshela Diaz at third base, Jose at second base, and Alan Zimmer in center field.
Hmm.
I don't know. I feel like maybe he's kind of blocking. No,
I wrote about this last week, didn't I?
Yeah, a little bit.
I did. I mean, he's Let me ask you this, Matt. How many times in the last 3 years have you either thought or written or said on a podcast or to a person, well, if Jason Kipnis is his old self, or something to that respect, right?
I think I've said that more than any other phrase that I've ever said in my life.
Right, right. It's just, it's
something. Just clinging to the hope.
There's just, he was so good years ago now. But that's the thing, again, and I mentioned this last week. It was years ago. He hasn't been a good hitter since 2016. He's put together 278 games with an OPS under 700. He's averaged 11 home runs and 93 games the last 3 years. I mean, injury or not, he's been terrible. He's just, and he's never been that good defensively. He's been okay for a couple seasons there, but a lot of that can if you want to look at in various ways, positional adjustment counts there. He's cool and nice, and we all love him, but we talked about this earlier. Dang. It's hard to blame one. you can't blame one man for anything, but his existence as a clubhouse leader or what have you, or a Francona favorite, really did. And the question asking, I think that does have a good point there, did kind of force a bit of rigidity to the roster, because you can't move Ramirez because Kipnis is there, which means you can't give Urshela a shot. So you let him go for whatever,
Or even this offseason, imagine if Ramirez was at second and you could have got Derek Dietrich for nothing. Like that's if the, right. the big gap was at third base and there was no debate over moving Jose to second, I feel like there's a lot more options you could have got really easily at third base.
The besides two options Diaz the question asker mentioned too. Yeah, the two options he mentioned, I mean, those are both third base options, and they just had too much at third base, and they had this guy that they couldn't do anything with at second. And I never really thought about it that way, but that is an excellent point. Certain players just on this roster make it so you can't do very much because they don't have a lot of value elsewhere. Nick Kipnis didn't have the arm to play third. Doesn't have the arm to play third. He's not going to play fucking shortstop. He doesn't have the bat to play first. He doesn't have the arm to play corner outfield. He doesn't have the bat to hide and left, and he doesn't have the range to play center, and he can't pitch. So
I don't feel like it's even fair just to say Kipnis specifically. This feels like a Tito thing. As always, we always go back to. He's just so reliant on these guys that he just refuses to move on from.
No, and it's not like it's a fault thing. It's just they had this player who they invested money, and not a lot of money, but a decent amount of Cleveland money, and he was good at one point. Players don't typically just fall off cliffs, Like it's just not. Arc of a player's career isn't usually up and then thud. That doesn't usually happen. There's usually a gentle fall, and it's just. And when a player has an injury plagued season like he did in 2017, you expect some kind of bounce back towards what he was somewhere between 2015 and 2016. One would hope, an OPS around 800. If he had an OPS around 800, then we're not complaining, right? But we're talking about a 100 and now 200 point gap. We're talking about a total lack of power, no stolen bases to be, not like he was many years ago. Obviously, it's not as spread as it used to be, but it is, I think, in part, due to a rigidity forced upon the roster by just a team that really prided itself on being flexible with where it can move guys around, and it was one of the things that made it good. And he was just kind of the thing that everything else had to kind of turn around. He's kind of the fulcrum of sorts.
Right. And he's not a player that should be that centerpiece as he is. He just kind of ends up that way because
what the it's about him, so. Because he can't play anywhere else. And he's not a centerpiece. It's just he just happens to only be able to play one place. So,
So thanks, Jared, for that question. He asked a bunch, but that's the only one I think we're going to get to. A lot of his questions revolved around like Tyvan Berkelio and specifically Urshela going to the Yankees and hitting so well, which I don't know. Maybe there's something there, but maybe it's just luck. I don't know. But Urshela never looked good here. But again, that could be he just didn't like what he was hearing. He wasn't hearing it the right way. And in New York, they told him, that works. I'm going to start doing that. And then he's drilling the damn ball everywhere. So
he always had a good glove.
Oh, yeah. And it's still good there. So they've got so much value at third base there now in Gio Urshela. That's what we always said. Remember, if he could even be an average hitter with that kind of glove, he'd be a starter all day. And now he is.
And to be fair, he did spend
yeah, they gave him time.
And also, he did go to Toronto in the interim. The Indians aren't the only ones that whiffed on him, really. So,
All right, so that's going to be our questions then. And I think that's going to be our episode. Actually, this is a longer. I didn't know if this one would go very long because the Indians suck so bad, but it was kind of cool that we got into just a almost like a stream of consciousness conversation there for a while about how bad the team is. It's nice to do that once in a while.
Grumbly, you know, it's just the way it goes.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. when you're watching this.
I'm upset.
Well, if you enjoyed listening to us talk and be grumpy about the Indians, I'm sure we'll be doing it more this season. Hopefully, eventually, it'll be happier. But in the meantime, go ahead and subscribe on Spotify. Oh, it's not iTunes anymore. What do they call it? Apple Podcasts, whatever they're going to change the name to. Subscribe on there.
They did dump that.
Where else are we on? We're on Stitcher. We're on all kinds of places. So just find us wherever you can. Pocket Cast, we're on there too. Let us know. Leave a review if you've gotten this far. I don't know anybody. I wouldn't listen this far in the podcast, but thank you if you do. That'll be it. So we'll talk to you hopefully next week with a much happier string of games.
See ya.